Suppose he's almost done. He's almost done.
It's like a table reading.
Here's our square table discussion.
Yes. Somebody's hoodie.
I love square table discussions.
Yes. Welcome to the Feudal Podcast, and today we're going to talk about our favorite villains in films.
We talked about Anthony Minghella.
We talked about character study films at one point, and so we can sort of continue to talk a little about character issues. And did you re-up on new tats on the hands there?
Kristen's getting that. It's old news now.
Yeah, it's lost its humor to her, as far as she's concerned.
Well, it never had any humor.
Oh.
The humor to me was that she was getting annoyed, and now she's getting annoyed to the point that it's not even funny for me. It's just dangerous.
I getcha. You're walking a fine line.
I'm walking a fine line.
She put you on notice.
Yeah.
Are you ever going to get real ones?
Oh, no. See, that's the thing is that I can't see myself getting
You can pull it off. I could see it when we were doing Roadhouse and you had the short sleeves and you could see them all like in all over there. I was like, nah, that works.
It's still, I mean, you can still.
It works. You know, you look like a member of House of Pain or something, you know. Jump around. Jump up and get down. Who you are behind the skin. The
muscles. Well, I am pretty powerful.
Well, speaking of villains, so we just talked about two prominent ones in a comic, and we talked about Zod, General Zod.
Lex Luthor?
And Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor coming from sort of the capitalist, industrious, figure it out, do it on his own way, on his own terms, Charles Foster Kane kind of like character. And then you've got General Zod, who's just sort of a military dictator, sort of an Adolf Hitler type.
Right.
So those are two paradigms for villainy, I suppose. One is just it's got to be on my own terms, and I'm going to build things the way I need them to be. And in that case, I think Luthor is a much more interesting villain than someone like a
He's
Zod.
A stupid
like,
villain.
Like a general military dictator.
What do you think is so great about Luthor?
Because
I think he's like over... Like, overdone, you know? Like,
well, in some senses, maybe in some avenues. I don't know. I know he became president in the DC Universe, and I'm not trying to generalize about every single form, but I'm thinking more along the lines of when the Kurgan voiced him in the Bruce Timm animation stuff. Clancy Brown did the voice of Luthor, and Luthor was essentially, like, he ran Metropolis. Like, you know, he's like, in the first episode, he says, you know, 3/4 of the people of Metropolis work for me, whether they know it or not. He's a multinational, like CEO, and he's also a really sharp scientist. And his almost his rationale for being an antagonist to Superman is this alien. He's this other that comes in, and as much as to the annoyance of someone like Zach, is sort of a god that can't be stopped, that could do whatever he wants at any point in time. So Luthor has teamed with the military. He's worked with his own scientists to develop, contingency plans in the case that Superman decides to go rogue and go crazy. So in a lot of ways, Luthor is an antagonist to Superman, but he's never really a villain necessarily in every single case.
I think Thor could take Superman.
With the mighty hammer?
With his mighty hammer? Yeah, he's like a god, man. He can take Superman any day of the week. Lightning bolt.
I hate Superman. I hate Thor. Wesley's way more of a bad guy than Lex Luthor.
Well, yeah.
If you look at superhero movies, I think the best bad guy is got to be the Joker in Batman 1.
The first Batman?
Yeah. Jack Nicholson plays him excellent, and he's
like that Joker.
He likes Prince music a little
he's
too much.
He's nuts. He's just absolutely nuts. And
he fell into acid.
He fell in the acid.
I don't really like
he's,
that.
He survived the falling in the acid, and then like he's just going out to like rob and then basically just kill people.
He's
for
criminally
no
psychotic though.
He's insane. He's one of the best villains.
So he didn't
ever
choose to be bad. I mean, he was already bad before.
Oh, he was already bad.
Yeah, he was bad.
He did
bad.
Choose to
he
be
was
bad.
Just like a he was just a petty
he
thief.
No, but he was a psychopath.
His parents.
Yeah.
Yeah, in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the movie.
And it wasn't
Dance with the Devil in the Pale Moonlight.
Yeah, we
it wasn't Joe Cool, like, as we all know it is in the original series, or the comics lore. No,
Joe Cool. What if the Joker's What if his
sidekick was Joe Camel?
His secret identity was Joe Camel. He's Joe Camel in the day, and he's Joe Camel.
That would work.
Our friend Ryan came up with an idea about a private detective who he was a human private detective in the day, and at night he moonlighted as a giraffe.
I don't know what to do with that.
I'm sure there's something.
So we got the Wesley types. Then we've got the guys like Denzel Washington in Training Day, sort of the cop that's got it all figured out, got it all under control. He understands his neighborhood. He knows how he has to treat the certain some of the perps there. He's got to be rough with them. He's got to get his take. He's got to get a taste. And so, like, those are more interesting characters because there's sort of a point where you have to just decide, is this a real bad guy or, you know, and obviously they always sort of tip it in the more Hollywood movies. They just sort of all of a sudden give you the, okay, yeah, now he's a bad guy. Now he's clearly a bad guy because he's, you know, just murdered somebody and that makes it easy. It's sort of the Alan Moore school of ambiguity where you just make somebody, you know, say, oh, Hitler wasn't such a bad guy. And now all of a sudden, okay, now they're a bad guy. Or they beat their wife. All of a sudden they're a bad guy. There's no room for this sort of ambiguous villain type, which I think is a lot more interesting. Or there's always the good guy, the wants to do the right thing so desperately and is sort of admonished by society to the point that they're driven to villainy. Professor Chaos from South Park, lesser degree, General Disarray.
What about the villain who? Is actually just a good guy who's making an incredible choice for humanity, like
Ozymandias.
Oh yeah, that the hubris hero.
Well, the question is he really a bad guy?
Yeah, well, yeah, he was easily the bad guy.
Are you sure?
No, he was 100% the bad guy.
Are you sure society isn't the bad guy?
Ooh,
you mean Richard Nixon?
The world.
Exactly.
Yeah, Nixon on his fifth term, right?
I don't know. I think that when you talk about villains, you got to talk about like real villains. You can't like. A good villain is not someone you can argue about whether he's a villain, whether he's not the villain.
Well, I think that's more interesting.
It does make it more interesting, but I think like the best villain. I don't know for some reason the best villain.
The guy from True Lies, right?
Not the guy from True Lies. The guy from Pan's Labyrinth, the captain.
But he's really. Like, but you know what? I had a problem with him because he's awesome. But he's pretty flat.
I didn't think he was very flat.
They don't even ever try to pretend that he's a good guy. And
sometimes the villains aren't good
I like
people.
To see... I know, but that's the thing, is that the difference in real IRL... I almost said the wrong thing. The difference IRL between a villain and a good person is so microscopic and just the tiniest...
Sometimes?
...touch of egotism or something like that. I guarantee you Hitler did not believe he was a bad guy, but this... You know, they all do something that they think is good for something. The captain is just so... He doesn't, you know... He shoots a little girl. You know, like... He beats people's faces
He sees it as his duty to his country, as a soldier, as being...
To kill a little girl?
Yeah, to kill a little girl. Well, she took his son.
It was his son.
It doesn't matter.
The most important thing in his life was his son.
So we made it personal.
They put the thing about his father's watch in there.
Yeah.
That was, I thought
that uncomfortable was, piece of metal.
Yeah. It's an uncomfortable hunk of metal. I thought that was the thinnest character in that whole movie.
I would disagree. I like
and the girl was similarly very thin. She was just kind of a Mary Sue.
I think the captain was arbitrarily probably one of the best villains ever. You don't talk about a thin villain, about the Emperor in Star Wars. All he knows, he's a bad dude. He wants
you know,
to
yeah, but what about Darth Vader? Am I right, you guys?
No, Darth Vader has a long and tortured past where his mom was killed. And
no, I was saying, yeah, that's what I'm
stuff
saying.
Like that.
Yeah. He's a slave.
They gave reasons behind it.
So he's an okay, pretty good villain, but I'm saying the Emperor.
No,
they don't
I hate,
tell
but,
you anything.
But I don't think that's necessary.
Lust for power.
He's Sith Lord, yeah.
For like a PG, like. Basically, like kids' action series. I don't think it's necessary to do much more than, hey, here's the bad
but,
guy.
But you can then occasionally do that, and it is making a better show.
Darth Vader's character.
See, the
well,
captain,
I guess that's what the first
what
three
makes
episodes
the captain
were.
A good
yeah,
villain.
That the whole
because,
story arc is about that
yeah,
character.
I guess, but it was really.
The thing is, what makes the captain a good villain is that, you know, he's very believable that he's a person. He's not just like some mythic person like, oh, I'm the Emperor of Star Wars. I'm going to lightning bolt you. You know.
I thought he was like completely more of a, because the fact that he was so like,
realistic character. I don't think you understand.
It would have been cool if they talked about the Sith more in that.
The way, like, the conversations they had with people at dinner, he was so stiff and wooden and just evil at all times.
Have you ever met anybody like that?
The dark side, bro.
I have. I have met people that are completely, you just look at them, you're just like, oh god, these people are bad people, and like, just the way they talk, the way they act, they're not healthy.
You can't like look inside them, you know?
There are very unhealthy people out there, and I think the captain, in a way, he sees it as his duty to be this way, but he's still an unhealthy.
What are we talking about now?
Very unhealthy person. And it's very, in my mind, it's very realistic because it puts like a realistic person as a bad guy, which there are bad guys like that out there. There are bad people that are out there that will sit there and toy with somebody and then finally shoot them a couple times and kill them. It was so
cool when he beat the guy with the wine bottle.
There are people like that out there. And that's what makes the captain an excellent villain, because there are people like that out there.
And I think what makes him a terrible villain is the fact that he's so one note the whole time and they never have any sort of change or character. And besides the tiniest little thin facade of something about his father's watch, you never get any reason why he is the way he is. And he never shows any other side to him other than that. And if you look at something like...
He exists to be the epitome of what the antagonism...
They created someone who's the epitome of incredibly the fascist, evil, unrealistic. Exactly. Dutiful. He's the epitome of the fascist thing. And he's so, you know, he's so evil at all times that he's just a person that you constantly want to be foiled by the good people.
I guess that's the way you see it.
Well, he was like really...
No, I see your side too about really, this issue of duty and stoicism, and that what drives him to become a monster because
he wanted doing to it for, keep for his King legacy, country. His father's legacy, and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, he found his father to be like someone who he didn't even like. I don't know. Like people talk about his like he couldn't even live up to him or something like that. Yeah. He was really they didn't even make it seem like he was really that upset by it.
That's often the case. Sort of son has to deal with the repercussions of the father's accomplishments, and he's usually stigmatized by it or something. I mean, that's prevalent.
That's
in like
not the problem. It's
a
just
lot of different series.
Look at something like
in movies.
I don't know. Even like No Country for Old Men, like the Shiguro character is like, you can tell that it's a pathology with him, and this person has. He's a psychopath. He's literally like, and it's like a mental condition with him. It's a psychopath, and he explores it and he twists it, and he questions him. Like it's always like he's questioning himself, and he talks to people in the way he does because he's trying to make them come up with a reason why he needs to stop. Like, he's trying to stop himself, you know. And that's so interesting. And you take a character like the captain. It's just like this guy who's just this ultimate evil character who at any time could choose not to do the terrible things he does.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't know, that's just like the difference I see between something like that is the what makes him less interesting to me is the fact that he's just so one note all the time.
Sometimes people enjoy doing naughty things.
Sometimes they do, but then they also have points in their life where, you know, no one is 100% evil at all times. And I think movies that show a bad guy who's 100% evil at all times, for instance, I think he's just as flat as, like, Timothy Oliphant in Die Hard 4, you know? Like, that character's just, like, it's just there to be a bad guy. He's just evil all the time. I'm mad at something you did to me. Yeah. And he doesn't show a nice bone in his body the whole movie. Like,
he's just trying to help the country, you know, get back.
Yeah. People who hold people hostage in real life are generally people who have some sort of, Dog Day Afternoon is based on some real thing. It's not like some person, you know, some person was a bad guy. You know, it was like... He's made out to be the villain by the media or something like that, but he's doing it for a certain reason. Like, people hold people hostage because they want someone released because of some cause they believe in or something like that.
Or money.
Yeah, well, but in a Die Hard, but they usually want the money for a certain reason.
Yeah.
In a Die Hard movie, that sort of thing, where all it takes is a totally flat villain, which is fun in that type of movie because they don't expect you to believe it.
Yeah.
There's a difference between something like that and a movie that's meant to be taken more seriously as art. And meaning and stuff like that, like Pan's Labyrinth or something of the like, or No Country for Old Men. And then in a Die Hard movie, you get Hans Gruber,
who's just a thief. An exceptional thief.
And he just wants to steal some money and kill a bunch of people, you know? Or he doesn't care. He doesn't mind killing most people along the way. He doesn't show.
I don't find him to be a flat villain, though. I think Hans Gruber's a pretty well. He's more comedic. And I mean, if you think you get those lighter sides with the pregnant woman, and he's like, "We'll bring a couch out," you know, like he's working with things.
And that's the thing is, like, even though he's all evil, it's not just one flat note.
Yeah.
And he does the thing where he pretends to be the. He uses the southern accent, and
yeah. He's like, "Oh,
don't kill me! I'm not one of them." And like,
no bullets. We think I'm fucking stupid.
You know, it actually was interesting. I just heard Alan Rickman on. For some reason, I just because I was sick and I called him to work yesterday. I watched an old King of the Hill. It was something with a Renaissance fair, and this guy totally sounded like Alan Rickman. I was like, Alan Rickman wouldn't be on King of the Hill. It was him at the end, and he was playing like. The king and Renaissance fair, and at the end, I knew it was him because the guy turned into somebody gave him a bill for like sexual harassment or like a subpoena or something, and he turned into his American self because like he was just faking it because he's some Texan guy, and this Texan accent was so bad. I was like, oh, that is Alan Rickman because he can't speak in an English accent or like an American accent,
or he was just doing an homage to his famous character.
But the difference between that and the Die Hard one and the Captain character is what I'm saying is it's not just. Who the character is supposed to be, but it's the portrayal and the way it's written. If you put like in a cheesy popcorn movie like that, you know, they're meant to have like a little levity and stuff. So you almost like them at times, and you enjoy them being the bad guy.
It's about the banner.
Yeah, and in this case, this captain is just this dead-eyed, evil-looking guy who's never does anything funny or something.
I mean, but Pan's Labyrinth has this whole mythical side, so in that sense, he's supposed to sort of represent sort of a demon.
That's true. In my mind, bad guys aren't supposed to be funny.
The best bad guys are funny, though.
Some
they have to have like movie. A little
thing. In a serious movie.
And I guess that's what their
bad guys was aren't trying supposed to, you know, to be funny. Like I'm sorry. Shticks.
Joseph Stalin was like a stand-up comic. Have you ever read stuff about him? No, I'm just kidding.
No, he's kidding. But I think that we're talking about the difference between something like a real character, where yes, you absolutely have to be that kind of. Hard lined about like this is a bad dude. This guy needs to be taken out.
But in a serious film,
you need it. It works better if there's because like Zach says, you're trying to make art. You're not trying to make propaganda. So
yeah, exactly.
So that's
the difference.
You need to explore the realm of the psychological. Now, sometimes it's a different kind of villain. I mean, a psychopath works in a suspense film, something like Zodiac, where it's just you don't really know what's going on. He's got a kill for crazy reasons.
Exactly.
My mom always watches all that Bill Curtis stuff, and I occasionally am trying to figure out, like, why was the guy doing that? And she's just like, because he's a nutcase. And I'm like, that's not interesting. It's not interesting to me. Right. I mean, at the same time, I'm not surprised by it. Some people are always like, why would someone be that crazy and do that? Like, and I'm like, well, you better hope that they're crazy to do that, because if they have a good explanation that they can explain to us, then what the hell's wrong with everybody, right? You know? But usually you can find that in the more epic bad guys of a story. You know, the people that do really seriously bad things, there's this sense of, well, they thought they were doing it for the right duty.
And not just that, but you get a sense of their humanity and the very small steps that it took to lead them over the edge. And it seems like they put characters like that in movies as an almost a like some sort of warning type thing. Like, you know, this
sure.
It only takes a few short steps, reaching over the line one way or the other off the moral path or whatever, before you get into this gray area that can lead to this slippery slope of just,
what is considered once you evil. Once you make this decision, you know, once you stand up and you decide, you know, to do this or not do that.
And that's why, as you always bring up in stupid movies where someone, you always expect someone to say, we're not so different, you and I.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's really what they try to put in movies like that, because you show the differences between the hero and the villain are very thin. It's just a few scant decisions that they made.
Or how they're treated, you know.
Exactly.
The villain's girlfriend dumped him and the hero's girlfriend.
Well, I mean, there's movies where people are treated poorly at the same time. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I know I've seen movies where like people both came from the same bad background. And the villain asks, why aren't you helping me? You know, like, you should be helping me get back at this rich society, where then the person says, well, I just decided to, you know, the moral high ground.
It's the fox and the hound thing again.
Exactly.
It's the Brooklyn style, like, hey, we were kids, and now it's not really what happens in Mystic River, but there's a little aspect of that. One of them becomes a cop, one of them becomes a dirtbag Sean Penn, and I'd sort of say that as a blanket statement. I think it covers it, you know?
Sure.
And And it's like, well, they both grew up in the same situation, but they just had different outlooks on it.
I think they tend to do that more in movies where it's supposed to be a serious examination of, like, you know, human spirit and choices of humanity and so forth.
Or tragedy. It's just a straight-up tragedy. Someone was in a position to make an intelligent choice, and they didn't. They got emotionally clouded. I mean, I just finished watching I Am Legend, and I mean, everyone bitches and moans. I guess it's not the same as the book. No, I heard that it was like he lives.
It's a little different. It's actually more interesting, and it really is more like the book in a way, even though he lives.
Okay, because you get the whole thing where you get the thing where he kind of
it's almost like he's realizing he's a bad guy. What happens is, they all rush in at the end.
The guy's trying to smash through the plexiglass.
And they all start smashing through, but the big guy comes through, and he stops all of them from doing it. And he, on the steam on the glass where that's stopping them all, he draws a butterfly thing. And the butterfly tattoo is on the girl that he has there. And so at that point, he like stops and he does slow motion, I'm realizing something thing, you know? And they're showing like he realizes that he's basically a monster to these people. And they have their own society. They have feelings. They have love or whatever, and they are developing in their own slow way. And who is he to take that all away from them or whatever? And so he gives them the girl. They take it, and they all just walk away. And then they're there alone, and they don't, I don't know what that...
They drive off, and...
They go to the Vermont strong society thing.
The thing that I prefer about that is they don't have the really forced voiceover. He's a legend because
the original ending
was just stupid, like how he jumps in with a grenade.
I thought it was just kind of dumb.
And that would kill all of us. The one thing that really bugs me about movies is that grenades don't explode like that. It doesn't have a huge ball of fire. It's shrapnel. It's like a puff of smoke and shrapnel.
A shockwave and shrapnel.
Yeah, and if there's 50 people in a room, the first 10 people are going to get shrapnel and knocked backwards, and that's it. You know,
and the other people
But the thing I wanted to make a point of is this issue of tragedy. I mean, basically where he fucks up is once his dog gets killed, he doesn't bother to take care of himself and triage his wound. He stays out all night and he goes on a revenge spree, which apparently he hadn't done for the first 1,002 nights he'd been on his own.
Right.
He loses his shit and then that's why everything goes to hell. And so the whole point is once you get emotional about some things, I think that's usually... It's often the case that the lesson in these sorts of films about the fine line between evil and good or whatever is often muddled and different. It's the stoic one adhering to duty and all ends up veering towards the path of monstrousness, and the emotionally flexible, flighty, fickle, do what feels good, I'm doing what I want and it's great for me thing, ends up being happily ever after. Sometimes that's the opposite case, Right. Sometimes when you let things become emotional is when you become self-destructive. Rather, it doesn't save you, it ruins you. And so I think that you get different ideas about them. And I think that's what leads in people's personal lives. There are people that are more emotional and people that are more stoic or more thoughtful, I guess. And when you see those two themes played out in a film is where you decide which character you're going to go with. Are you more sympathetic? I'm usually less sympathetic to an emotionally, emotional dingbat in a character that ends up being the good guy than I am, and more than I am to one that's more thoughtful. Because in my own life, I'm sort of more thoughtful and stoic about about how to approach doing things.
You're Jesus, basically.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that my what I have, the way I think about things, it has to be reaffirmed in a film, and if it's challenged, that's fine too. I still get something out of it. But you often find you're more sympathetic towards a tragic ending. Or for a potentially villainous character.
Right. Here's what I'm talking about. I'll go back to the Pan's Labyrinth thing. Remember the Blade movies?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Blade's a vampire, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, half vampire.
It doesn't matter.
At one point in
all three movies, someone goes, "Blade, you're one of us. Join us. You're not so different from us."
Uh-huh.
And he just made some whack-ass decision early on in his life not to kill humans. And he's sticking by it because he's...
Well, his mom was a human, right? And she was sort of raped and attacked, and then they have the thing where there's the vampire that looks like his mom.
Or maybe it was turned into his... Or mom was turned into something else.
It was his mom.
And then he has to end up killing her or whatever.
God, yeah.
And
that's
so
the way it goes.
They do have things where you can overcome that emotional hurdle and then just be, you know, badass about killing people again. Not a problem. But yeah. but that's, you know, that's fun as a popcorn movie, but if you try to like examine that like realistically as like good character study or something like that, you couldn't do it. You couldn't say, you know, Blade's a really good guy, or Stephen Dorff is a really good bad guy. You know, it's just retarded. They're just, I'm going to kill everybody. And the other guy's like, I'm going to stop you and I'm going to kill all of you.
But you can look at the subtext of the first Blade film, and it's about a subculture of people that are essentially consider themselves a higher class, right?
Oh, yeah, we class.
These people are food to us, right? I mean, you've seen the whole
class,
damn movie, and I could give a rat's ass about it.
There's a new class, because there's an old class of vampires.
But it's about class warfare then.
Yeah, it always is. All movies are.
Okay, so there you go. So once you can do that, then you can look at the representations of the two characters and their arguments, and you can see, well, Stephen Dorff's sort of a, you know, he's a fascist, right? That's why he's a bad
guy.
He's
a fascist.
And what? Fascist. And would Blade be cool? With vampires, if they didn't kill people, he probably would be, right? Because he's cool with the sun bomb vampires played by Ron Paulman in the second one, with the sun bombs.
Like Ron Paulman,
yeah, but you know, that's just because they got it. They're both rough. Animal. They're both like leader types,
he
right?
Them.
They're alphas.
He kills him.
Yeah. Kills him.
He ends up killing him. He was never cool.
Probably
betrayed him.
Probably because he betrays him. There you go.
Him, yeah.
He changed the rules.
You knew he was going to do it the whole time.
Wasn't
you could see by the look on his face.
It wasn't part of the deal, you know? And then you've got characters like Auntie from Beyond Thunderdome, who's trying to just run her situation.
He just wants you to give him the chicken.
Or you get a character like...
like my papa said before he killed my mama, if you want something done right, you gotta do it yourself.
You get like Gene Hackman in Unforgiven again. You get a character that's just trying to like control law and order.
That's an interesting character.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
I was building
a
house.
Yeah. That's the one that's different, is that he is just a guy who happens to be a little too happy with his position of lording it over people.
They defy it. And if he's the one in the West that's supposed to be the law and order,
yeah, exactly.
he says has to go.
That's what bugs you about the movie, is that you think they pretty much killed the bad guys, the good guy at the end of the movie.
I think they did,
and that's what's amazing. That's what's great about the movie, is that
partially
you can make a good guy look like
but
a bad guy.
The Eastwood did the we already talked about this, where he eluded.
You don't know anything. Shut up.
They were contracted to kill the guys that cut up the chick.
That's understandable. But that has nothing to do with Gene Hackman.
That doesn't.
No, but he did basically kill a guy who didn't do anything.
That's the easy part. I was just getting to it. That's where they give you he's a bad guy.
Yeah.
And that was ridiculous. And then they get the whole... On top of that, they give all this illusion to what a terrible person Eastwood was, but they never give you any visceral association with that.
So that you don't actually...
Exactly.
Because
if they did, you would... If that movie were really hardcore, it would have had that shit in it.
That's an easy way out of an anti-hero thing.
It would have had that. It would have shown him killing women and children in the beginning.
I still...
It would have given him flashbacks. And you would have said, whoa, this is actually nihilistic and not just some, you know, we can all change piece of shit.
What movie has a good anti-hero in it?
Well, there's a difference.
Well, that's
there.
The thing is that the anti-hero is usually either it's someone who's too weak, like for instance, the anti-hero in the name other
there's Jack series. Jack from The Getaway, right? Was that not The Getaway? What was it called? No, that's some stupid movie where the guy calls him an anti-hero.
Jack, you anti-hero.
Oh, yeah. The Chase.
Yeah, The Chase. Yeah.
If you gotta get away now. Let's go back to Fistful of Dollars and Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
Okay.
Clint Eastwood's character is supposedly an anti-hero in that.
That's an outlaw hero.
Not,
yeah.
He's not. He's barely even an outlaw here. How's he an outlaw? You know,
because he's outside of the system. I think there's a difference there. I think anti-heroes are a little tougher.
If you read anything about it, they put it in there. Like,
yeah.
The thing is, you know, the most interesting anti-heroes are the ones you usually don't find in that list. I think a real anti-hero, by the very most definition of the thing, is somebody who, except for one change that he makes in the film,
a bad guy.
They are a bad guy until one point comes where they decide to make a change and they do something good.
And usually the root of it is hero, both an outlaw and anti, which is why I think outlaw heroes are more Western heroes.
You anti-hero?
I think anti-hero is it's a tougher one to pull off. But I agree with Zach. I think the outlaw hero is someone that is more of like a libertarian ideal character, you know, sort of an Ayn Rand type of outside of the system, does their own thing. They're a rebel because of it, but they're not a bad person. You know, Indiana Jones is an outlaw hero. John Wayne, in most of his films where he's not the sheriff, is an outlaw hero. They can never stay at the dinner table with the family and the searchers or whatever. He can go out, do the terrible things that he needs to do, be a rough, tough guy to exist in this world, and then he can deliver the girl to the family, and then he leaves. There's no place for the outlaw hero in society. It's also relatable to the film noir protagonists of a hard-boiled detective, because they have to negotiate the world between the law and the crime element. So they're within both of those, so there's never really a place for them to have peace. An anti-hero, on the other hand, could be fully functional within society as an asshole.
Rob De Niro's character in Taxi Driver is an anti-hero. That's absolutely 100%. It's someone who, like you said, exists in society almost just as an asshole.
He was going to assassinate that one guy, and that's such
an interesting character idea. There's this movie that came out last year, straight to DVD, with Christian Slater, and it called...
Hollow Man 2?
No, he was a quiet man. Uh-huh. And it's got a really interesting idea, and then it ends up being, like, just crap. Completely horse shit. Mm-hmm. And what it is this guy at this office goes on a killing spree, and comes to the place and goes on a killing spree, kills a dozen people until he is stopped and violently killed by Christian Slater, who's working in that office and is this timid little man. The ironic thing there is
that he was going to do it the next day. He had brought
his gun to work because he was going to do that himself. And then he turns into some hero by the media. Huh. And all he wanted to do was kill a bunch of people because he's, like, you know, pushed.
But now that he gets the hero thing, he gets what he needs.
Interesting idea, right?
Yeah.
Turns out, like, an animated talking goldfish told him to do it. It's a shit movie.
That sounds like a good idea.
So,
that's too bad that
the taxi driver thing is done like that, except without the
talking goldfish.
Stuff. It's like,
that's stupid.
Yeah, he's someone who's ostracized by society, and he even makes a couple of friends, and he makes friends with other taxi drivers, and Peter Boyle's character is kind of friendly toward him, and he accidentally becomes a hero at the end, even though he's just... That's the thing, is like, an anti-hero can be someone who's almost... does become a hero in some sense of the word by accident. Not with good intentions.
What about defense from falling down?
No, because here's what he did. I was on that guy's side for a while until he gets to the commando place, and he's like, come on, and he finds the button and it opens up, and then he changes his whole look and everything. Once he decides to change his whole look, he decides to go psycho vigilante, and then it's no longer about him just getting to his daughters. It's no longer about him negotiating through this terrible crime-infested world where people are going to try and kill him. If he had stayed in the suit the whole time and not re-upped on weapons and changed his look, you know, and put on the flak jacket and shit, then I would have been on that guy's side.
They say, and you might have a big argument with this, but I think this is a pretty reasonable explanation. Snake Plissken from the Escape movies.
Sure. Because his motivation is purely, purely selfish.
So selfish, always.
And he's been a criminal, and he's been a dirtbag and everything. Yeah, definitely.
He's my hero.
Tony Montana and Scarface is one. I think it's pretty solid, just because...
If you wanted to treat it within the world of outlaws, then he could be considered an outlying... That's why I like the out part for outlaw hero. It's an outlier within the group.
1, 2, 3, 4. That's so cool.
If you take a bad guy, and you make him 34, any sort of story literature,
then you have to make him some kind of protagonist.
And you make him the protagonist, and there can be worse bad guys.
Yeah, no women, no kids. Those other guys are willing to kill children. He's not.
I think that's still an anti-hero. I think that falls into the thing.
You could do that, or you could just straight up call him the protagonist of the film. He's not F. Murray Abraham, you know. But when they point at the ground,
he's a drug dealing murderer. Yeah,
exactly.
That's an
but if no women, no kids, you know, and no one that got it didn't deserve it, right? What about someone like John Cusack in Gross Point Blank, where he's a hitman until he decides to kill that guy, and decides that he doesn't want to do it anymore?
I don't think anyone in a comedy can be an anti-hero.
He was too lovable. It defeats the
purpose. It is too lovable, exactly. Mm-hmm. It defeats the purpose because it's not presented to you at any point as somebody you should.
He was
neurotic and lovable the whole time.
Okay, here's a good one. Why it's my favorite movie.
Pete.
De Niro, and he is an absolute anti-hero, and here's why. He finds out where Wayne Grow is from John Voight, who's hesitant to tell him because he knows his personality so well.
Right.
and he's and there's that scene where he's driving to the airport and they go into the tunnel and it gets all blue and it's doing the whole Michael Mann thing.
Sure.
And you're just like, no, you got to go take this guy out. This guy, this won't stand. And he goes and he takes him out. Mm-hmm. That's a conscious choice on his part to do something. Be you know, now he doesn't know the guy's a serial killer.
Right.
So there's that added bonus on top. Same with Bickle accidentally sort of doing something heroic.
Yeah.
But his is sort of just more happenstance, like, you know,
and like crap balls and stuff. It ends up being like a selfish reason. Like he wants to do something for himself.
Well, for De Niro, it really isn't, because it's because he knows that guy that Wayne Grove turned in and other people got killed on his crew.
I was just talking about a taxi driver.
Yeah, but other people on his crew did. So it's not even a selfish reason. It's almost like it's a very principled reason that's also kind of based on sort of a sense of honor for honoring his compatriots. And so that's an absolute anti-hero situation in that movie, which is why that is such an interesting film, because you've got Pacino as this sort of outlaw cop hero, because he's so weird and off the wall, and he's not
he's imperfect,
and he's imperfect. He's got a stepdaughter that tries to kill herself, and you know, his wife is done with him, and you know.
And I think that you can go to the other end and say that somebody who has overall good intentions for society, someone like, say, in Fight Club, the Tyler Durden character.
Good intentions for society? That's another fascist thing, though, because that's on his terms.
But it's still something that he sees to be good. And when you put that in a protagonist, I think that it automatically becomes kind of an anti-hero type thing, just because it's someone outside, almost outside society. Usually you see someone like that. Like
they're blowing up credit card buildings, yeah. I mean, at best case scenario, you're an anti-hero.
But it's someone who operates on the outskirts of things. Oh, sure. And, you know, and is always ostracized. And then kind of when they come into the system, it's usually just to break it up.
Mm-hmm.
Clint Eastwood played so many in those cowboy movies that, you know, it just kind of become cliche that that's the type of character he plays. The Dirty Harry is probably an anti-hero, except for that he usually has just like...
No, those are... I really like making the distinction between an outlaw hero and an anti-hero, because I really think that it...
What the fuck is an outlaw hero?
I described it. You must have been watching PTI or something while I described it. An outlaw hero functions outside of the society, system, but also works within it. And it is a good guy that just doesn't always play by the rules. I'm generating it for myself and not from Wikipedia. I'm sorry. Yeah. Heaven forbid.
You need to make your own.
Heaven forbid that I create. Heaven forbid that I create my
own.
Did you look it up?
I create my own scholarship in film. I think I can do that at this point.
It just sounds like you're describing an anti-hero. Exactly.
No, an anti-hero is a prick until he does something good at the end. He's a criminal, a dirtbag, a piece of shit, Snake Plissken. An outlaw hero is a hard-boiled detective that, you know, does the right thing most of the time, but he's gruff about it, and no one really loves him, and no one invites him over for dinner. He's
unconventional.
You know, he's somewhat unconventional, and, you know, he's ostracized by society, but he still always sort of does what's right.
Unorthodox.
An anti-hero always sort of does what's wrong until he eventually does what's right at the end. There's a difference. There's definitely a difference.
Sounds pretty sketchy to me.
No, it's not sketchy.
I think it's not.
it's a good guy versus a bad guy. But
Pancho Villa, outlaw hero. Oh, interesting. There's a book called that.
Yeah, I mean,
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Casey Jones, outlaw hero.
Casey Jones is a vigilante.
Yeah,
vigilante.
Yeah, that can just be a vigilante
on some level, but usually they're not to that extreme degree. Hmm. You know, you could say Charles Bronson from the Death Wish films is an outlaw hero. That's applicable, I would say, because he's not, at the same time, he's not sort of a criminal that's doing bad things to good people. He's doing bad things to bad people.
Well, that still makes him a criminal, though.
Eh.
A crime's a crime, right?
A crime's a crime. But he's not, like, living off of the suffering of...
They should have made a Dirty Harry versus Death Wish movie.
They should have. Because Dirty Harry
wouldn't give a crap if he was doing it for good reasons. He would just kill the guy.
Exactly. Dirty Harry wouldn't.
They would have killed each other.
It's Death Note. It's Death Note, basically. But here's the thing. With Bronson's character, there's not this sense of utopian extremism that usually makes it more anti-hero. Because he thinks he knows what's right for everybody. the outlaw hero can't have that. He can't have this. He can't have this. I'm gonna come into your society that I'm not part of, and I'm gonna make it the way I need it to be on my terms and redefine it. That's more of an anti-hero thing. That's a Tyler Durden thing. That's so, I'm gonna blow up the credit card companies because your world that doesn't work for me doesn't work for anybody and shouldn't work for you either because I say so. Right. And that's bullshit. That's very
outlaw hero. Everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like the three things that Google comes up with for outlaw hero is Jesse James, Pancho Villa, and Casey Jones.
Yeah, it's bullshit. I mean, I'm generating some of this on my own because they're really interesting concepts to me. The outlaw hero concept and masculine theory and stuff.
And it'll say what kind of hero it is.
I mean, really, I don't need the internet to tell me what to think about this stuff.
Well, I mean, I've watched enough films
and I've generated my own sort of opinions about these things.
No, I'm just saying. Yeah, you're curious what people say. Like a real... like, you know, term other than outlaw hero that, you know, it's...
Well, I mean, hard-boiled detective is one. And then an outlaw hero is more applicable to Old West, to to John Wayne in The Searchers, to Clint Eastwood in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Or Vash the Stampede in Trigun.
Vash the Stampede in Trigun on some level. You've also got Yojimbo in the Kurosawa film. Someone that comes in. I mean, Yojimbo's an outlaw hero because he comes in.
No,
he
does things on his own. Anti-hero. No, all he does, it's all selfish means. He doesn't give a crap.
Well, what does he get in the end when he says so long and leaves?
Oh,
well, he
gets fed.
Well, he got all their money first. They all paid him the whole movie. He got tons and tons. He got tons and tons of money
from the bad guys, right?
Yeah, from all of them. Yeah.
And then didn't he end up giving it back to the good guys?
He gave some to that poor family that was broken up by the prostitution.
That could be considered like his defining moment as an anti-hero.
Exactly. Kind of thing,
I suppose. If you don't think that he didn't always intend to be doing that. You know?
Well, I mean, the thing is, that's just the whole Fistful of Dollars character. Yeah. It's just it was remade in the Fistful of Dollars guy, and it was...
Well, there can be a reluctance in the outlaw hero, too, but I think that there's generally less of it. Or you just always know that they're probably going to be a good guy. The anti-hero is the one where you're like waiting and you're thinking they could go bad. They could still at the end of the film be like they could just decide to shoot that guy in the back.
The hot-handed god of cops.
What was that? The killer?
Yeah. The Hong Kong name for Hard-Boiled is Hot-Handed God of Cops. That's the official name.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Dude, that's awesome.
Hard-Boiled is the most badass movie, dude. It's the best like cop movie. Yeah,
I like awesome. Killers though, because like me and my brother watched that and it was just like. It's like non-stop, like John Woo killing everybody.
Yeah, Killers.
He gets
Killers
like
awesome
shot
movie.
Like 20 times, and he still just like kills everybody.
That's the most depressing movie.
I rented it. I never watched it.
Yeah. Never don't give anything it. Away to him.
Oh, well, he just kills everyone.
Yeah, like, I know that he didn't give anything.
The whole Chinese guy in a white suit with guns. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Hard Boiled is awesome because you can also say it's annoying because it started the whole thing with like Chow Yun-Fat, like just played this perfect like I don't give a crap guy. And in the beginning, he's like in this cafe. You seen that one? Hard Boiled.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Yeah, the beginning's in the cafe, and everyone tries to say it's a toothpick. The whole movie's actually got a match in his mouth. It's not a toothpick.
Yeah.
It's a match. And he like for some reason he has a match in his mouth like all the time. Like what's he gonna do?
Except when that's when he plays the harmonica, or is that the killer where he plays the harmonica?
I don't remember. Was it the killer?
It was that one, I think. Oh. Hard Boiled.
It was Hard Boiled. Yeah.
Yeah, because I saw that one and I remember him playing the harmonica.
And so he, and then there ends up being like there's some sort of like deal gone bad in the tea house that also has like birds everywhere, bird cages.
Yeah, it's the one with all the doves. Yeah.
Yeah, and they
so begins the doves.
It was so violent. Like he's covered in flour by the end of it, and he like slides down this banister, and there's these shootouts and stuff. And so he lands next to this guy, the last bad guy standing at the very beginning of the movie, and he slides down next to him, and he's covered in flour, and he sticks the gun up into the guy's face, and the guy's like, wait, and just cuts back to his face, and he spits the match at him, and just pulls the trigger, and blood splatters all over his flour-covered face. It's the most violent, disgusting, like this guy's not a good cop at all. He's just a serial killer. He's a mass murderer with a badge.
Yeah, you get into a funny place when the quote-unquote good guys are now just anti-heroes, because that's really talking about sort of a nihilistic Yakuza film.
It, you know, what basically is for filmmakers is an excuse to have your guy be like, oh, that's awesome, he totally killed that old lady or something like that. That was sweet.
Can you buy those in a box set, you think? Like The Killer or Hard Boiled?
You might be able to. Another one that's it was his really big three that Chow Yun-Fat were in were... first one was A Better Tomorrow.
Yeah, Better Tomorrow.
Which Chow Yun-Fat is a secondary character in, but he's really the most interesting character. Mm-hmm. He's even on the cover. He's like the only guy on the cover, but he's like a sidekick character to the main guy. Even though he's the one who has a really... You've seen that one, right?
I think I've seen some of it, yeah.
It's the one where, like, there's these two guys who are in a crime syndicate and whatever, and Chow Yun-Fat is really he's really the anti-hero. The other guy is, like, just kind of a tortured hero. Mm-hmm. He wants to go right the whole time. Yeah. Chow Yun-Fat never does. He only at the end he decides to just protect his friend and, you know, get mowed down. And it's not that great a movie, but it was a really good role by him. It was pretty violent too. And then he did Hardboiled.
Is that the one with the gunfight in the church?
That's The Killer.
The Killer, yeah, The Killer.
It's not the director's cut of Aliens.
Yeah.
You wait a hell of a long time before the aliens pop out.
Oh, yeah. It's like 45 minutes or something.
And they don't do it in the way where, like, something suddenly jumps out from behind a corner and goes, rah! And they're like, oh, shit, it's an alien.